From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in the town of Rutland, Vermont, where a family of four had to make a decision about how to power their home. The New Yorker told the story of Mark and Sarah Borkowski. Mark, a school bus driver, Sarah, a special ed teacher. The cost of energy for their home took up a large portion of their income. But the main utility in Vermont asked them to consider something else, something new. Working with Green Mountain Power, the Borkowskis gave their home what the New Yorker called an energy makeover. New insulation, a new heat pump for hot water, two air source heat pumps to warm the house, LED light bulbs, and a small solar array on their roof. They paid for the improvements, but the utility financed the charges through their electric bill. Before the energy changes, the Borkowskis used 3,400 kilowatt hours of electricity over a four-month period, along with 325 gallons of fuel oil. After the changes, in a four-month period, they went from those 3,400 kilowatt hours to 2,800, and from 325 gallons of fuel oil to zero. That was an estimated reduction of 88% of their carbon footprint with significantly lower monthly bills. So why don't we see more of this kind of option? Well, not all utilities are treating solar and new energy like Green Mountain Power is. And some utilities argue that customers who don't have solar panels are getting an unfair deal and they should be protected. More on that in a moment. This hour, let's try to sort out the way forward. Our conversation was sparked in many ways by a series of reports on WROC-TV by Adam Chodak, who is their anchor and managing editor, and Adam is back in studio. Nice to have you here, sir.
Always a pleasure.
Also here is Dr. Susan Spencer. She's the founder of Rockspot with a PhD in microsystems engineering. And Dr. Spencer, nice to have you here as well.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Lainey Brown is on the line with us. Lainey is Iberdrola USA's Director of Smart Grid Planning and Programs. And Lainey, thank you for taking the time for us.
Thank you for having me.
And on the phone with us as well is Dorothy Schnoor. Dottie is the spokesperson for Green Mountain Power in Vermont. Dottie, thank you as well.
I'm glad to be here.
I want to make sure that we start, you know, sort of framing this as accurately as we can. So let me just start with a question for Adam Chodak, who did this recent reporting for WROC-TV. What piqued your interest in this? Why is this a story that you wanted to do right now?
So you had said at the New Yorker article, when I read that, I thought to myself, can this be applied locally? Are we having a similar issue here? In other words, I looked into solar energy and I thought, is it growing here and is that presenting any challenges? So I called up RG&E, a spokesperson there who I've known for several years now, and just started chatting with him about this. And he said that some of the other utility companies that were expressing reservations about the growth of solar, and reservations might not be the right word, maybe worries or questions about the growth of solar, he said that they were having some of the same ones because it disrupts the business model that many utility companies work under. And after that conversation, I thought to myself, well, let's talk about the possible challenges and the upsides to going solar. And then that moved into other stories like, how much would it cost? What would it look like if you wanted to solarize your home? And then I thought to myself, well, I haven't been to Vermont in a while. Why don't I get in a car and go there and see what Green Mountain Power is all about and talk to some folks in Rutland.
Okay. So, and so Adam did that for his series of reports. We also heard NPR's Peter Overby recently reporting on this ongoing debate across the country. And Peter Overby found essentially what the New Yorker found, what Adam found. There's a wide range of approaches from utilities. Overby reports that many utilities want rooftop solar users to pay their fair share to maintain the current grid. He spoke to David Owens, who's the vice president of the Edison Electric Institute, which is a trade association of investor-owned facilities, utilities, I should say. Here's David Owens on the question of why customers who have solar should probably pay an extra fee.
We want to preserve the choice that customers have. If they want to put on rooftop solar, that is their right, and we think it's a great technology. What we are arguing for is fairness in paying for the grid.
All right, so some rooftop solar companies respond that they think utilities are trying to drive them out of business. Here's what NPR's Peter Overby heard from Brian Miller, who is the vice president of a solar company called Sunrun and co-chair of the Alliance for Solar Choice.
It's a state-by-state battle where utilities are trying to stop competition. They're monopolies. Monopolies don't like competition, and that's what these fights are about.
All right, so you can see kind of the two sides of it, and I think there's more than two sides, as we're about to find out. Let me start with Lainey Brown from Iberdrola. And one of the questions, Lainey, a lot of our listeners have already had this morning is, what's going to happen here? Is RG&E going to put a fee on solar users, have people who get solar panels on their house? What has Iberdrola been thinking about, and what have you decided?
Yeah, so we just recently are now part of a rate case and where we would typically talk about the development for the next couple of years. And we have not proposed a fee on solar and are not proposing a fee on solar in that rate case proceeding. So currently that's not our position at all. And in fact, we are really under the auspices of the REV proceeding, the Reforming the Energy Vision proceeding in New York. We're really looking at how do we make interconnection easier? How do we help support maybe faster connection of distributed generation for larger scale developers? So a lot of the focus in the proceeding is actually how to support increased levels of interconnection on the grid.
Lainey, do you agree with some who have said it is unfair to people who don't have solar compared to people who do? In other words, if you get solar panels on your house and there are plenty of people in your area who don't have solar panels on their house, that it's unfair to them and maybe unfair to the utility, and that's why we've seen fees proposed. Do you agree with that sentiment?
Well, I think the it really comes down to state and regulatory policy. So, and it's both a federal and state policy. Today, solar is subsidized either through tax credits or through funding mechanisms through the state, and not everybody participates. Generally speaking, all of us pay taxes, and so or you know pay an electric bill, and so there is definitely funds that we all pay into that are contributing to solar, et cetera. So I think you know that it's a question of do we think that renewables and solar are the right things to be funding, and do we think that's the right state and policy? State and regulatory policy goals.
I have to be honest and say that I didn't really hear an answer, though, Lainey. Do you think it's unfair right now?
Do I think it's unfair? I think, I would say maybe this is another non-answer, but our company is one of the biggest renewable companies in the world. And so we strongly support renewables if you look at our company globally. And so we just want to make sure that that there is fair treatment for all customers, but we are strongly in support of renewables.
Okay. And Lainey, to make sure I understand and our listeners understand then, no proposed fee. So right. anybody listening locally and is wondering if I want to go solar on my house, is there going to be a fee? There's not a proposed fee right now. Does that mean there won't be a fee at least for the next couple of years? Could that change? What is the status?
Sure. So our company, RG&E and NYSEG in New York, are not proposing a fee. Under the REV proceeding, they're looking at rate design and what's appropriate rate design for customers to encourage customer engagement, to potentially change customer behavior to make the system more efficient. So I can't say at all that there won't be any review of how customers both supply and delivery bills are developed. It's really a regulatory policy, but right now we are not at all proposing a separate solar fee.
Okay, and before I kick it around the panel, there's one other sort of, I think at least a new-ish development, new to me anyway, that I've seen. The New Yorker article contrasted Green Mountain Power, and we're going to hear from Green Mountain in a second. Contrasted Green Mountain Power in Vermont with Arizona Public Service. And Arizona Public Service essentially told the New Yorker they do view customers who install rooftop panels as, in essence, cheaters, getting the benefits of the grid, uninterrupted power, but because they provide so much of their own electricity, not paying their fair share. And instead of a direct fee now, here's another model. APS is proposing to get into rooftop solar itself, not by leasing the systems to homeowners as the rooftop solar companies do. There would be no long-term lease for a homeowner to sign. No electricity would flow directly into the house from the rooftop panels. So for APS customers, if you get solar, all of your electricity goes onto the grid for APS to use, not for you. And for this, APS would give homeowners a billing credit of about $30 a month for 20 years. Is that a model that Iberdrola, RG&E, would consider, Lainey?
Well, I think the regulatory policies in New York are different than Arizona. And one of the things that has been stated in the Track 1 REV proceeding is that utilities can't necessarily own distributed generation, except for storage, unless there's an area of the market or there's a group of customers that are underserved. So right now, at least the current regulatory policies don't permit us to own solar per se. But I think what we do want to do is try to figure out, and we're doing some demonstration projects looking at this, try to figure out how to help facilitate increased amounts of solar or for communities to figure out how to support solar. So some of the things I think that it sounds like, and I'm definitely interested in hearing more, some of the things that Green Mountain Power is doing, we're considering. So how can we help a community maybe in the facilitation, whether it's to help generate interest in and subscribers into a community scale solar, or how could we help maybe identify locations where distributed generation might be best for the system? Those are things that we are actively pursuing that I think helps encourage increased levels of distributed generation, but doesn't necessarily mean we own it.
Okay. We're talking about how utilities and solar companies might coexist into the future as our energy distribution changes a bit and energy needs change. And Adam Chodak, anything that you want to follow up on? I mean, it was your reporting that helped spark this. And, you know, it certainly seems that from what Lainey is telling us from Iberdrola's perspective, that they want to be and that they are obviously very interested in all kinds of different forms of energy. But what questions stand out to you, Ray?
Well, I would simply add that over the summer, the spokesperson from RG&E did tell me that they were considering a fee, very different from proposing. So this fall, when I went back and circled back with them and asked, what did they mean by that? They simply said, we're not proposing a fee. And then I specifically asked, right, are you considering a fee? Is that something that you're looking at? Because your spokesperson had told me that there are challenges that the growth of solar is presenting, and I want to be as clear as possible so the folks in the Rochester area know what they're getting. And they didn't provide that information. All they said was that they are just proposing, not proposing a fee. I also want to make very clear that I found out that utility companies are not like your regular company. There are restrictions. It's kind of this quasi-government private institution just because of all of the regulations that surround it. So it's not like they can change on a dime. They do have to listen to New York State. And therefore, they're very different from some other utility companies like Green Mountain Power. Green Mountain Power might have a bit more flexibility because they can have, say, a power source and the poles and the wires and all that. RG&E cannot have that.
Okay. And so let me bring in Daddy Schnoor then, who's on the phone with us from Green Mountain Power in Vermont. Is that a fair description, what you just heard from Adam, Daddy?
Yes, it is. I think it's really important to note that in different areas, utilities are dealing with different sets of regulations, different state policies, different power supplies. So I'm really looking forward to the discussion. It sounds like there's some great stuff going on in New York State. I think what Green Mountain Power is doing is really exciting and transformational, and some of the things may apply and some of them may not. So it's just important to learn all about it and kind of take what works for your area.
Okay, and what we're seeing from our listeners already are these comparisons that may work and maybe they don't work for the reasons Adam and Donnie were just explaining. You know, here's NC on Twitter saying, why should I pay a fee if I get solar? Should there be a road tax if I ride my bike to work? I heard somebody say this morning, I grow vegetables in the back of my house and I also shop at Wegmans. Wegmans isn't going to hit me with a fee for growing some of my own tomatoes just because I'm not going to be buying from Wegmans. That would be ridiculous if they did. But Lainey Brown, are those unfair comparisons just because they don't track perfectly to how utilities have to operate?
Yeah. So I think I want to go back to what Adam said and then maybe answer this question.
Yep.
I mean, I think what is really important to note is that we are an investor-owned company, and so obviously it's important that we meet our shareholders' needs. But really importantly also, we have an obligation to serve everybody. And so that does make us kind of one foot in the camp of kind of a public entity serving the public, and also ensuring that that there is a fair return, and that our company can stay financially viable, and that's and it's I think a balance that we try to make within the regulatory environment. Maybe under that, one of the things that's important to note is if you have a solar panel you're still connected to the grid, and we have to have our infrastructure there in case you want to use us. And so there's a cost to have that infrastructure there. And a lot of our costs are fixed costs. They're not variable costs. And so that's, I think, where some of the discussion around what's the rate, what's the right kind of structure for rates. I think a lot of the bill right now is a variable cost. And don't forget also, it's important to note, and I think we talked about that a little bit, that there's two parts of the bill. There's the delivery part, which is what RG&E does, and then there's the supply or the electricity part that's the supply of energy. And so a lot of our costs, basically the poles and wires and transformers, are fixed costs to ensure anytime you want to use our system, it's there. And so that's a little bit different than, a Wegmans. They don't have to guarantee if you want to buy a pepper, it's going to be there, even if you're growing your own in your backyard. They don't have an obligation to make sure their vegetables are there. Now, it's in their best interest because they sell vegetables, but if they don't have their vegetables there, they don't get in trouble, if that makes sense.
Sure, absolutely. So while I understood the comparison, I do know that there are those differences, and thanks, Lainey, for pointing them out. You're hearing Lainey Brown on the phone with us. She's Iberdrola USA's Director of Smart Grid Planning and Programs. And I want to go back to Dorothy Schnurr, who's on the line with us from Vermont. She's a spokesperson for Green Mountain Power. And so, Dottie, you know, the New Yorker article hits this summer, and you got a lot of people talking about utilities, maybe dichotomizing the world of utilities a little unfairly into either hostile or friendly to solar. It's a little more complicated than that. But clearly you look to be the company that is friendly and embracing of where the energy future is going. And so why don't you tell our listeners a little bit more? I kind of told the story of the Borkowskis and their home, but tell me a little bit more about what you do for customers who inquire about solar and the way you try to kind of make it work for them.
Sure, and I go back to your initial comments earlier about utilities thinking that solar was disrupting the utility model, and that's something that we actually think is good to do. It's a different world than it was 10, 15, 100 years ago when utilities were started, and we think that things are changing, and what we want to do is be really responsive to what our customers want. And in Vermont, people want more renewable energy. They think that's really important. And it is important to do it in a way that respects the costs and make sure that other customers aren't hurt. But we look at it a little differently, without getting too technical into all the various costs. What the cost of solar, net metered solar, is higher than other places we might buy power. However, it's important to note that the value of the solar is different than any other source, because what happens with solar, it helps us lower our peak demands, and peak power is very expensive, and we also have to build a transmission system to supply peak power. So in Vermont, we've already saved $400 million through solar and energy efficiency by avoiding peak. So when we look at the cost of solar, rather than just saying, gosh, solar is more expensive than other sources, we look at what it's saving all of our customers. So in fact, back in 2008, not only were we not charging a fee for solar customers, Green Mountain Power put into place in 2008 a special financial incentive for our customers on every kilowatt hour of solar they generate. That incentive several years ago was extended by the legislature to all customers in Vermont. Because we see that it's really basically a good for all. So we've taken that, and you mentioned the Borkowskis, which was great. They were the first family we worked with to do what we're calling an e-home, and that is really how can we take all the different things that we're doing for our customers and do them all together in one package in a way to help our customers save money, use less energy, and in fact then be more comfortable. And the Borkowskis were a great example. They put in heat pumps, they put in heat pump water heater, did a lot of insulating, exchanged out their lights. We have controls on some of their systems, and they have found they're saving money. The carbon footprint is greatly reduced, and maybe even more importantly to them, they're more comfortable. Their grade school children were in bedrooms that were cold in the winter and hot in the summer. And with all the work we did, they're, in fact, much more comfortable, and their cash flow is better from day one. So we are extending that program to offer that to other customers. And we think it's a game changer. And we're just looking at the world a little differently than how utilities did in the past.
Sure. But Dottie, and I also want to follow up and say, when Dottie describes sort of this e-home or this new energy future home, as the New Yorker said, you walk into it and it doesn't look like anything crunchy or granola or any stereotypical idea of whatever you have in your mind. It looks like any average American home. There's a One Direction poster on the wall. They have the same bad taste in music as the rest of us. So this is the average family home. It's just powered in a different way. But Dottie, one of the assumptions or one of the concerns is ultimately this can't be good for Green Mountain Power. How does this work for Green Mountain Power? How is this sustainable if everybody did what the Barkowskis did?
Well, you know what? Our job is like any company, that we need to adjust to what our customers want and find a way to be successful doing that. So we are helping our customers reduce their use. We're encouraging people to do solar. We're also very active in helping transform the transportation to electric, a cleaner electric transportation network. So we are in the midst of installing a statewide comprehensive electric vehicle charging stations. Our customers we're helping them switch to use heat pumps, which use electricity but are far more efficient, save money, and less carbon footprint than oil heat. So we think that there are ways that we can continue to really help our customers, but to do it in a way that we can continue to be financially sound so that we can do more of that in the future.
Let me turn to Susan Spencer, who is the founder of RockSpot in Rochester here. Susan, remind our listeners what RockSpot is, first of all.
So RockSpot is a local organization that is completely focused on helping transform our city to 100% solar capacity by 2025. We see solar as a tool to generate economic development, create jobs, and reduce poverty for everybody in our city.
Okay. And, you know, there are some people who support your mission, but they assume that your mission is diametrically opposed to utilities or that they would be an enemy of RockSpot, this kind of thing. And Susan is always telling me, it's much more complex than that. These relationships are important. They're important to you. They're important to RockSpot. But you've got a chance now with both Green Mountain and Iberdrola on the phone to kind of explore a little bit. If you have any questions, I mean, what stands out to you from what you're hearing as we go forward, either from the Iberdrola side or elsewhere?
Well, I think if we zoom out for a minute, the thing that we need to understand is that Hurricane Sandy demonstrated that our current model of electricity distribution has great potential to fail when devastating storms or massive uses of electricity happen. And that's problematic for consumers, for businesses, for municipalities, and also for the utility. So we're all in the same boat looking at the same problem, which is how do we improve our grid? How do we make our state and our electricity delivery as reliable as possible? So RockSpot comes to the table representing both residential consumers of electricity, as well as small businesses, large businesses, and investors and developers who see solar as a way to bring more power to where power needs to be for economic development projects, while simultaneously reducing, as the representative from Green Mountain Power said, reducing the peak demand on the grid, which is something that solar is very uniquely positioned to do. So I give Green Mountain Power an enormous amount of credit for all of the efforts that they've made. I mean, they're really just a shining example of how utilities and community organizations and consumers can work together. I think Iberdrola has taken some great steps within the state of New York. Their work in Ithaca with the community there to look into distributed generation projects and how those can be built is commendable. Their work with something called FIX, which is a flexible interconnection methodology so that we can reduce cost both for the utility and for the consumer when a solar installation comes on the grid. Again, that's commendable. So as RockSpot representing a wide swath of Iberdrola's customers here, we're really excited to hear that Iberdrola is looking for exactly what we are, which is how do we reduce cost and bring more solar installations onto the grid, be they rooftop residential or community distributed generation?
All right. Now, Susan, when we look at what happened out in Arizona with this, a company that was the first doing a fee for putting solar on your house and then kind of changing it to, well, you put solar on, we take the power, we'll give you a monthly discount. Is that a fee?
I would view it as a fee, yes. And again, I won't even perhaps necessarily pick on a utility. I'll pick on other parts of the solar industry. You know, anytime that a rooftop is leased or the model like APS did is used, it takes the value of the electricity out of the pocket of the consumer. So Rockspot firmly believes that the individuals should be owning the solar that's on their rooftop, and that communities, organizations, third-party developers, and investors have a lot of potential to own the power so that the individuals in our region are receiving direct, maximized benefit of the amazing potential of the solar technology.
I'm hearing a lot of customers just asking to follow up. Wait, are we getting a fee or not? Is there going to be a fee? And if you're just joining us, what we heard from Lainey Brown, Iberdrola USA's Director of Smart Grid Planning and Programs, is that there has not been a proposed fee for customers here. If you're an RG&E customer, for example, and you're thinking about putting solar on your house, there is not a proposed fee. But Lainey, for our listeners who might be jumping in a little bit late saying, what's the status on a fee? What could change that? What's the kind of information or consideration that would either change your mind, the company's mind on this going forward?
Yeah, I don't think actually from our company, from RG&E's perspective, we are not proposing a fee, and that's not something that we are proposing to do, you know, anytime soon. The thing that could change, and I think again we talked about it early on, is we are regulated. So if the regulators want to put forward and I use the word rate design, which maybe is very kind of utility speak, but basically kind of how you pay your bill or how your bill is constructed. If they want to change the bill or the rate design, that can be done by the regulator. So we are not proposing anything. I think one thing that is being considered, and I think we've talked a lot about it today, is how do you make the system more efficient or how do you reduce peak demand? Some of the things that are being talked about are rate designs or pricing structures that that incentivize customers to change their behavior, or change how they use electricity at you know, periods at peak time. And it's things like I think, you know, things like maybe designing the billing structure with you know, combining it with solar. It's a great combination because you can actually, they're great ways of matching how you use electricity with solar to really be more efficient and be a benefit for both. So, you know, I think that's a really interesting, opportunity to combine those two.
Listeners, we're going to try to fit in as many of your questions for the remainder of the hour as we can. So let's get a short break. We'll come back if you want to jump on the phone and join the program with questions or comments on where energy goes and the relationship of utilities with solar and more going into the future. You can do that. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI, 263-9994, if you're right here in Rochester. We've got emails and questions coming in as well. And if you want to read the New Yorker piece we've been citing, I posted it on my Twitter feed, at Evan Dawson, about an hour ago. You want to see WROC-TV's reports, Adam Chodak has posted them on his various feeds. Will you repost those pieces on your Twitter
Absolutely.
Feed today?
Yep.
So where are you on Twitter, sir?
At Adam Chodak.
A-D-A-M-C-H-O-D-A-K. So join the conversation and follow along with that. Adam is here from WROC TV. He kind of sparked the inspiration for this conversation with his series of reports last month on the subject. Dr. Susan Spencer, the founder of Rockspot, is in studio and on the phone with us. Two different utilities represented. Lainey Brown is Iberdrola USA's Director of Smart Grid Planning and Programs, and Dorothy Schnur is the spokesperson for Green Mountain Power in Vermont. Short break, your questions next. Coming up in our second hour, we preview a new program that debuts tonight in Rochester. It's called Exploring the Territory, White People Look at Race and Racism. It's put together not by some typical experts you've heard talking about race recently, but a couple of white members of our community who care deeply about the subject wanted to add their voices, and we're going to hear from them next hour.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Body Mind Float Center on Park Avenue, offering flotation therapy for stress and pain management and salt therapy for respiratory health. Details and gift certificates are available at bodymindfloatcenter.com.
All right, for the rest of the hour, after we get through a couple more quick points here, we will go to your various questions with our panel, who is kind enough to take the hour for us. Adam Chodak, and part of your reporting, a question that comes up often is net metering, for example. You want to start there?
Yeah, I didn't have a full understanding of how this worked until I understood net metering. So if you have a solar home, you have the panels on your home. In the summer, believe it or not, we get sun in Rochester during the summer, and we generate more energy, if you have solar panels, than you need. Well, that excess energy actually moves back into the grid. It's kind of like a two-way street. Well, then in the winter, when we get clouds, you may not produce enough energy to power your home. Well, that's where RG&E or National Grid might come in and say, okay, well, we're going to pump some more energy in. Well, net metering is interesting. So when you create that excess energy, you get a credit. And so you can use that credit in the winter when you have the clouds and you need that energy. So a lot of homes don't end up paying any money. It's a wash. And so that really led to that question of concern. Well, how do you make money? How do you have the finances to keep up the wires and the poles and all that? And that's when I was talking to Susan Spencer, and she provided an interesting answer to that question.
So the way that we're able to, maintain the grid, and one of the ways that a utility increases its revenue stream is with the delivery charges, which is something that you can find on your bill and see pretty easily. So every individual home is going to have a delivery charge because that is their price for connecting to the grid. When we start to zoom out a little bit, it gets a little more complicated because here in New York State, as we've discussed, we have Governor Cuomo is reforming the Energy Vision, which is an incredibly forward-thinking plan to move the entire state of New York from this centralized generation model to a distributed generation model. So to that end, NYSERDA has opened up programs like community distributed generation, and Rockspot is actively engaging in those programs by pulling together groups, investors, neighborhoods who are going to own their own solar installations that provide power for multiple areas of the neighborhood, businesses, critical infrastructure. And one of our biggest concerns and recognitions is that RG&E and Iberdrola are major stakeholders in that. You know, if we're going to be bringing a 2-megawatt or 10-megawatt installation online that's going to be powering 100 homes, this is something that we really need to have the utility's perspective on. It sounds like for Green Mountain Power, this is something that's actually produced a large amount of profit for them. I think Dottie said $400 million in terms of offsetting peak demand. So I would invite RG&E and Iberdrola to come to the table with Rockspot and help us make the best possible site selections for our 2016 community distributed generation fields that we possibly can to benefit the utility, benefit the consumer, and benefit our region.
All right, Dottie, can you clarify that number on 400 million?
Yeah, so I want to make sure you know that that's not profit.
Okay.
What that is it's lowered our costs, and that's to the benefit of our customers. We don't have that 400 million, and that's all of Vermont transmission costs. We've able to put off $400 million in transmission projects, so that's absolutely, totally a benefit for the customers of Vermont.
Okay. And so go ahead, Lainey Brown. I'd love for you to weigh in on what you just heard from Susan Spencer.
Yeah, sure. I think maybe along the same lines as the Vermont example in terms of avoided cost on transmission, I think that's a lot of what's being considered in New York, looking at are there what are called non-wires alternatives. So can you use distributed generation or energy efficiency to avoid making capital investments, avoid, you know, building out more distribution system. And I think just as Susan had said, I think there's absolutely an opportunity to work together to look at whether there's some opportunities in Rochester. I think what we are doing in Ithaca, as we talked about before, is helping to support the community energy goals, be an enabler of those goals. And one of the things is looking at helping to support community solar. We have the opportunity to obviously know our distribution system well and understand if there's areas that could benefit from kind of reduction in the peak demand or have constraints, capacity constraints, that could really benefit from reduction provided by distributed generation. So, you know, absolutely happy to have that conversation. I think that it provides a great opportunity. And I think, in fact, in Rochester, there are some areas that have been flagged as potential opportunities.
All right. I'm assuming you will follow up then, Susan.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay. See, look at connections, bringing people together. Isn't that nice? I want to get to your phone calls as well here. So let's do this. Val, maybe we can get to line three. I think that is Thomas in Greece, who's been waiting. He had a question about installation of solar panels on his own home. So let me jump over to Thomas. Go ahead, Thomas.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes. I received a call. They called me, I believe it was Home Solar Energy, and it was something connected having to do with the New York State government. They said that they would install, this was several months ago, they said that they would install solar, they could install free solar panels on my house, but then they asked me a few questions, and they said, which way does your house face? And I said, it faces east. And they said, well, then it's not possible for the panels to be put on my roof because it has to face south to get the full discount or the full benefit of the solar rays or the solar energy. And so they said, but however, they could, in place of that, they could connect me with a, not by wire, but have my energy given to me by a solar source several hundred miles away, a source of energy. They said that this program, this way of method was very had been very successful in Massachusetts and in Minnesota. And so I said, okay, that's fine. And then they discussed everything about the excess energy and everything being the excess energy that I don't need and everything being given away. And I said, they said that it would be cheaper. I would still have to pay something, but it would be cheaper than RG&E.
All right, Thomas, let me let Susan Spencer respond to some of that. Go ahead, Susan.
Well, I'm just saying that, okay, I set up an appointment for somebody to come down last Friday. And I was all ready for them, but at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, nobody showed up.
Okay, I can't adjudicate personal phone calls and stuff like that, but I do appreciate the larger points here. So, Susan, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you so much, Thomas, for your call, and I'll try to stick to the larger points of that, Evan. That is something that has happened. There are some national companies that are working very hard in New York State to be able to essentially lease your rooftop. So what they do is they own the solar panels, they own the electricity that comes off of them, and they essentially sell you your own solar at a slightly lower rate than what your utility company would. The problem with this is that you're never truly realizing the full savings that are available to you. And RockSpot sprung into existence partially from a recognition that there was not really anything in this area that was serving to advocate for the consumers and serving as a connection point so that someone like Thomas can speak with a local installer who lives and works here in our region and whose business is here in our region and who's totally committed to helping someone like Thomas actually pay lower costs, own their own solar, and transition to a free electricity, essentially, from the power that's on their house. So, Thomas and anyone else listening, I would encourage you to go to www.rockspot.org, sign up on our website, and we can connect you with our local community of installers that we've vetted, that we work with on all of our projects.
All right, RP writes to us and says, I've heard that the return on investment, either buying the panels or leasing, is up to 20 years, and that would seem not to be worth it.
So I can touch on that one as well. If you'd asked that 3 years ago, my answer would have been, yeah, that's unfortunately true. But the cost of solar has dropped precipitously, and this is because the cost of manufacturing it has really come down over the last 18 months to 2 years. So systems that we're helping get for people in our area are actually coming in with return on investments of 6 years or less. The panels themselves are warrantied for 25. So this means that you're going to have approximately 20 years of warrantied solar power for free producing for your home.
Okay. Adam Chodak?
Yeah, here's an average situation that I was able to cobble together. Your average home to put solar panels up is going to be about $25,000. You have state and federal grants. You can get up to $15,000 to $18,000 in those. That takes you down to about $7,000 to $10,000. And then a lot of solar companies, even locally, will help you finance that. So you might end up paying, say, $35, $40 a month to pay off that bill. Now, here's the fun part. Your electricity bill goes down, and sometimes it could go down by $35 to $40. So you might not have to put any money up front, and you may not be spending more each month, yet you'll have the solar panels up, and all of that will be paid off in about 7 years, maybe 10 years. That's the ideal, but that's a real situation for a lot of people in New York right now.
Colleen writes to us and says, I've always felt that the energy transition battle has been reminiscent of Kodak's resistance to investment in digital imaging, so I was delighted to see that comparison made in the New Yorker article. Why do utility companies, and even big oil, spend so much time and energy resisting change rather than becoming early adopters? Wouldn't jumping on the wave of the future and cooperating result in job security and therefore a better chance of continued long-term profits? I don't understand the protect our existing system at all costs paradigm, and I applaud Green Mountain Power's proactive on the interests of the consumer. That's from Colleen. And again, Lainey Brown is on the line with us, Iberdrola USA's Director of Smart Grid Planning and Programs. Lainey, do you view Iberdrola as, you know, interested in being an early adopter and in diversifying and making this profitable?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two things. Yes, I think we are an early adopter, and I think we have the benefit, as I had mentioned, the Iberdrola company obviously owns Rochester Gas and Electric and NYSEG, but we also have a portfolio of different energy solutions, including renewables. And so we actually have a lot of knowledge that we can leverage from those experiences and other parts of the company to help us as we look towards the future and I think look towards the future in an innovative way. So we're excited about that, and we're excited on how things are changing. I do think, though, it's important to note that we also, just going back to maybe the, you know, we serve everyone, and we need to make sure that that everyone has access to electricity and it's as reliable as it can be. So I think we try to take a balanced view where we absolutely want to be looking towards the future, and we want to be providing the services that customers want, but we actually serve a wide range of customers, some of which absolutely want to buy solar, and some of them want to maintain, the way they are served today, and that's completely fine, but we need to serve both.
Dan writes to us, he's got solar panels on his home in Hamlin, and he says, I currently don't have a reason to take my home with solar off the grid, but he says if a local utility goes with a fee, it would be like they want to give me one, a reason to go off the grid. Lainey, are you concerned about that? I mean, are you concerned if we see more people, and currently the trend is, of course, is leading to at least some increase in homes with solar, and how fast that is remains to be seen, but that has certainly accelerated in the last 12 to 24 months. Are you concerned that new solar customers, if a fee comes down the line at some point, you know, would say, I'm going to try to go off the grid? Has that been part of the discussion?
I think that has been a position that's been stated. I don't think we've stated it, but, you know, that there is concern. I think the thing that's so interesting about REV is that, and I think Susan also hit on this, you know, I think there's an opportunity actually for people who have solar to stay on the grid because their panels can contribute to value to avoid other costs, et cetera. So there's real value of actually staying on the grid, and I think it's not something that exists today, but I think in the future, or, you know, it's still new, I should say, but I think in the future that's something where there's more and more opportunities for people who have solar or other types of distributed energy or the ability to kind of come together as a community to provide distributed resources, that there's real opportunity to stay connected to the grid because it actually will be of value for them and for the grid.
Okay.
This is Dottie. Can I add something to that?
Sure. Go ahead, Dottie.
I think that's great, and you know, as we get more and more technology, there are going to be more benefits. Green Mountain Power is also really committed to using distributed generation to help with resilience, and one of the things that we're just introducing now is we're the first utility in the country to partner with Tesla to sell Tesla home batteries. So our customers, particularly our solar customers, will be able to put in battery storage that they can pair with the solar, so So the two things, one, in a power outage, they can use the battery storage to keep their home going, and then the solar can, during the daytime, refill the battery so they can be much more resilient even if the system around them is down. But the other thing we're doing is we're giving the option that if the customers let us to tap into the battery during peak periods of time, that can help us save money, just as we were talking before with the peak shaving, and then we'll give customers a credit for that, so that there's really great benefit for all customers when customers do solar and battery storage and remain connected to the grid. So we're starting that program, and I think that has some great potential for how we operate in the future.
Adam Chodak.
You know, Dottie, what's interesting is when you were saying that, I don't know if you remember, towards the tail end of our conversation, you were mentioning this, and I thought to myself, and then I vocalized it, well, if you keep promoting these batteries and they get better and better, will that put you guys out of business? And you had an interesting response to that.
Well, as in any business, you keep changing with the world and you find a way to be useful. We want to supply our customers with energy and with services they need. So as the world changes, we will find ways to change. So that as long as we're supplying our customers with things that they need, we're confident, as long as we remain flexible and nimble, that we will be in business.
Here's a question from a listener named Chris, and it's a little above my head, but that's why we've got a great panel on the program today. He says, is there a quick answer to my question as follows? Is there a long-range plan for smart grid interaction with electric car batteries for leveling bumps in consumer use of the grid? He says, I'm a rooftop PV photovoltaic. Mm-hmm. I'm a rooftop photovoltaic owner and an EV driver, and I want to anticipate this as I shop for the next round of technology. Susan Spencer.
So I'll take that from a general perspective, and then perhaps the utilities can discuss it from their business models. But when we look at what's going on nationwide and globally, the advent of smart grid technology is allowing for the much smoother distribution of electricity over a much greater array of both sources and users. So what does this mean to answer your question? The ability to have agile, smart grids is an area of incredibly active development that I think is going to be moving into deployment within the next 18 to 24 months in a lot of areas around the country, and hopefully here in Iberdrola's holdings in New York.
Okay, Lainey?
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually an area that we want to test. One of the things that we are in the process of developing is an energy smart community in Ithaca. And it's one of the areas that we absolutely want to test is both that combination of really dispatching batteries and solar, and what does that combination look like? Because I think the thing it would be enabled by smart grid. We're looking at deploying smart meters in the Ithaca area in 2017. And one of the things that I think is really interesting is that combination of different distributed resources, battery, solar, et cetera, to really provide a robust and resilient resources for the future, whether it's for resiliency or whether it's to serve customers.
We got about a minute and a half left here, and I just want to let our listeners know where they can get more information out there. So Dottie Schnorr has been on the line with us from Green Mountain Power for the hour. They were the company that had sort of a big role in that New Yorker piece that came out this summer, and also Adam Chodak went out to Vermont for his reporting last month. Dottie, if people want to learn more about what your company is doing, what's the easiest way to do it?
Go to our webpage, greenmountainpower.com. We've got lots of information there, and you can probably find your way to me, and I'm happy to talk to anybody who wants to give me a call.
Thank you for taking the time for our listeners this hour, Dottie. It's much appreciated.
Happy to do it.
And Lainey Brown has been with us for the hour, Iberdrola USA's Director of Smart Grid Planning and Programs. You know, Lainey, what would you want to leave our listeners with as we move forward into our own energy future, and we try to get over this, are you hostile or are you friendly? You know, it's obviously it's a more complicated question, but what do you want to leave our listeners with going forward?
Yeah, I think what is happening in New York is so exciting, and that it will be incredibly dynamic over the next couple of years. So I think stay tuned, stay plugged in, no pun intended. I think there's a lot that's going to be happening.
I will say this, Lainey, we called RG&E, the folks there put us in touch with you. You've spent the entire hour. I know our listeners appreciate it. I hope you'll come back, and I hope we can keep talking about these issues and related issues.
That sounds great.
That's Lani
and
Brown.
Hopefully I can actually do it in Rochester next time.
You got it. That would be wonderful. That's Lani Brown, Iberdrola USA's Director of Smart Grid Planning and Programs. Adam Chodak, if he hasn't done it already, he's going to put his own reporting up on his Twitter feed that you can find from the work that he did in the Energy Series last month.
Most definitely. I also put it on my Facebook page as well.
Thank you, Adam. Thanks for taking the time to come in as well. And Susan Spencer, the website for your organization.
www.rockspot.org.
I don't even think you need the W. I don't think you need the three W's.
I still like saying it. It makes me feel good, Evan.
What year is this?
Come on.
Let me have about the future. You just took us like 10 years
into the
past.
That's right. You have to start with HTTP.
It's multi-generational engagement, Evan. That's what just happened there.
Thanks to all of our guests this hour for this conversation. A short break and more Connections next.